In Parshas Mishpatim, during Parshas Mishpatim, around 17 years ago, which is 2002, Rav Lichtenstein spoke about the delicate balance in our desire to draw close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the other hand, the necessity of creating distance and not compromising the boundaries. So obviously, Har Sinai is the perfect opportunity. Har Sinai was that calibration between closeness and intimacy and distance and awe and boundaries. Rav Aaron spoke about it more through the lenses of the end of Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah describes Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, the 70 Zekanim, ascending the mountain, a Yiras Elokim, and Yisro Hashem. And a few words later, Torah says, Al Atzile b'nei Yisrael lo shalachas yado, it's a very, very strange combination of imageries. People ascending the mountain, seeing Hashem, being spared from punishment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not, Shalach Yado, did not punish them. They saw Hashem and they ate and drank. There are two vastly different ways to view this episode. Rashi and the Rashbam are very critical that seeing Hashem was inappropriate. Looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu and imagining some physical image associated with Ribbono Shel Olam was theological heresy. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu withheld punishment. It would have ruined the party, as we would say. The timing wasn't right. And Hashem delayed their respective punishments. And Nadav and Avihu were punished when they committed a similar infraction in Parsha Shemini, overstepping their boundaries by offering regimented korbanos on that first day of the inauguration of the Mishkan, and the Zekanim were punished in a delayed fashion at Tavera. The Rashbam follows his grandfather Rashi, but the Ramban in Onkelos, and Rashi quotes, at least alludes to it, says that this is something more favorable. They were happy, they were elated, their korbanos were accepted, and they were as elated as if they were eating and drinking. They weren't eating and drinking, they weren't compromising the transcendence of the moment. But their joy and their triumph was so great it's as if they were eating and drinking. And the Ramban follows suit. And the Ramban doesn't discuss the eating and drinking, whether it's actual or a metaphor. Rather, Onkelos says it was a metaphor, and therefore it wasn't a trivialization of the moment. According to the Ramban, he just talks about the fact that the prohibitions of ascending the mountain, which had been so sternly imposed in Parshas Yisro, were now alleviated or lifted. Rav Aaron wanted to discuss Rashi and the Rashbam's position that the seeing was inappropriate. And of course, every time Rav Lichtenstein would discuss a certain idea, he would first quote the classic Rishonim. In this case, the machlokus between Rashi and the Rashbam on one side and the Ramban and the Onkelos from the other vantage point. In part, as I said before, because as I've spoken about before, Rav Lichtenstein's study of Tanakh was very much based in the classic Mefarshim and the classic commentators, unlike some of the styles of Tanakh, which the yeshiva sometimes affiliated with, that are more literal, that are reading the psukim independent of the way the Rishonim read the psukim. And second of all, because Rav Lichtenstein was always about balance, and so he wanted to provide us the two perspectives, and then say that he was going to discuss one perspective, but that doesn't eliminate the validity, and we shouldn't ignore the presence or the existence of the other perspective. So Rav Aaron wanted to analyze this prohibition. What made this such a violation and such an infraction? And again, very much characteristically, Rav Lichtenstein felt that there was a moral issue as well as a religious/theological issue. And Rav Aaron always had that moral voice, and he always introduced that moral voice independent of, I think, that sense that probably one of Rav Lichtenstein's most famous articles, that there can be a moral ethic independent of halacha, that we have to be moral not just because halacha dictates or legislates, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us moral, created us pure and noble. That our nobility and our morality has to affect our lives outside of the parameters of halachic behavior. We can't just adhere to halachic demands and thereby satisfy our moral obligations. So it was always latent within Rav Aaron's conversation, the moral element. And not just the moral element that stems from our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our acceptance of Torah, but a standalone one. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had instructed Moshe that only he and Aaron were to ascend. Parshas Yisro. Bergama Kohanim Anigashim Al Hashem Yiskadashu Ben Yifrotz Bohem Hashem. And the Kohanim and the people were not allowed to ascend. And somehow these elders assumed they're different. These boundaries, these limitations were only set for ordinary people, not for men of such prestige, popularity, position. They saw themselves as Moshe and Aaron-like, and they weren't subject to the same regulations that affect other people. And there was an elitism that led to, in particular, this kingdom, but even Nadav and Avihu. Now, Rav Aaron didn't expand or elaborate upon this. I am. Sometimes people of high achievement and high station truly believe that the laws and the mores and the social codes and the human conventions that apply to everyone, they're beyond that. They're different. And Rav Aaron's whole identity and his whole message, he saw himself as a very simple and ordinary person. He felt that he was responsible for the same duties that everyone else dispatched, domestic duties, interpersonal duties. There's never any of that elitism or supercilious sense of superiority that we sometimes detect in people of achievement in various public realms. And I think that this statement was very characteristic and very reflective of that. But most of the sicha, and this was the sicha, which I believe was given at Shal Shittah Sudash Shlishit, surrounded not the elitism, but the theological danger. They assumed that the boundaries would hamper the immediacy of their encounter, the intimacy. The Zekenim sought to relate to Hashem in a very direct manner. They failed to realize the infinity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the unbridgeable gap between God and man. And this was the theme of Rav Aaron's conversation, that even when Hashem is close and karov, he still remains unapproachable and transcendent and detached. And it's a theme that recurs throughout Sefer Shmos, that every moment of proximity and accessibility, there's a barrier and there's a distance. And there are many, many, many such references in the entire Torah, and in particular in Shmos, but Rav Aaron highlighted one at the beginning, one in the middle, one in the end, and this is where I think his literary style burst through. That there's a sense of balance and equilibrium, if you can highlight a pasuk in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. So, for example, in the beginning of the Sefer, Moshe encounters Hashem at the Sneh, and Moshe hides his face. Vayasim Moshe's panav kirei mi'abit al Hashem. And the Medrash talks about different positions where the Moshe was appropriate, but Rav Aaron felt that the overall spirit was favorable, and the overall spirit of this report was favorable towards Moshe, that at the moment of encountering Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe feels that a distance must be maintained or in some ways reinforced. In the middle of the Sefer, in Parshas Yisro, Kadosh Baruch Hu appears to Moshe and tells him, "Hinei anochi bo elecha bi'av ha'anan," in a thick cloud. Even though it's Har Sinai, there's clouds, there's billowing fumes of smoke, there's fire, and there are significant barriers. Again, the barriers are graded or gradational. Moshe has certain barriers. The Jewish people have more barriers, but it's certainly a barrier to environment. And then the end of the Sefer, a pasuk Rav Aaron spoke about often, the end of Pekudei, when the Mishkan is finally constructed and inaugurated, that no one can enter the Beis HaMikdash, V'leichol Moshe Laval Al Moed, Ki Shechan Alav Hanan, Nechvod Hashem Meleis HaMishkan. The fact that you would expect Sefer HaGeula in the book of Shmos, and the climax of constructing the Beis HaMikdash of the Mishkan to conclude with direct and full entry and celebration, yet everyone is kept out. Even Moshe Rabbeinu can't enter. And the same phenomena occurs in Melachim, describing the Chanukah Beis HaMikdash, when the Aaron is placed in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim somehow are out of the Kodesh, the same cloud, the same Anan fills the Beis Hashem, and the Kohanim can't stand there anymore. Kichvod Hashem b'leis Beis Hashem. And it's really almost an identical story to the end of Pekudei. And the fact that the same story occurs hundreds of years later surrounding the inauguration of the Mikdash just reinforces the fact that the Anan descending into the Mishkan and barring entry was not incidental, it was not just circumstantial, but was fundamental and seminal and necessary part of the experience. And Rivara talked about the Gemara in Yoma. The Gemara in Yoma talks about during the Shalosh Regalim, so they would see the poles of the Aram, the Badi Aram, protruding from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, And those poles would resemble the torso of a woman. And that created an intimacy between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his people that was compared, that was analogous to a marriage. And in fact, during the Shalosh Regalim, they would pull back the curtains of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The people would all look at the Badim, and the Kohanim would announce to the people, they should recognize how beloved they are before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like the love of a man for a woman. And that's very, very close intimacy. But nonetheless, the gap is maintained, and it's only once a year, and Kodesh HaKadoshim is impenetrable. Or in Parshas Ki Tisa, where Moshe Rabbeinu wants to behold the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Moshe solicits that encounter, that immediacy, to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, "Bira'isa sacharai ufanai lo yirau." You will see the back rather than the front. So all these instances, all these examples, the three that Rav Aaron suggested from the beginning, middle, and end of Shmos, that great moment of Moshe at Har Sinai when he says, "Hareini naskivodecha," and Hashem says, "Bira'isa sacharai ufanai lo yirau," the repeating patterns in Melachim, during the construction of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, where the cloud descends and the Kohanim are barred. And just the general balance, the fact that there's an immediacy, an intimacy, and an accessibility that's highlighted and emphasized, accentuated by pulling back the curtains of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but yet no one can walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This was an opportunity for Avraham to remind us about the very delicate balance between feeling close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but not in any way encroaching barriers. And I want to quote two quotes from Rav Aaron Sicha. Again, keep in mind, these were all English translations of Hebrew renditions after Shabbos. So Rav Aaron gave the shiur on Shabbos. Afterwards, people wrote over the shiur, and then it was translated into English. Or I don't know if it was translated. Sometimes it was adapted directly into the English. But this one was adapted by Rabbi Dov Carroll, so maybe it was a more direct rendition, but it's still renditions. But this is how Rav Aaron more or less articulated. Anyone who thinks he can come closer to God than this, that he can bridge those gaps, has a deeply misconstrued conception of God. He is really coming close to a false God, rather than to God himself. And quoting the Rambam in Hilchos Yisrael De'Atara, the classic Rambam which describes the pursuit of Hashem through studying his works and studying his world and studying his Torah, and the passion that that pursuit should generate or catalyze, and the sense of standing in front of, in this enchanted moment of poetic interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and yet that person then realizes how infinitesimally small he is, and he leaps back in fear and awe, recognizing his inadequacy. Rav Aaron summarized, true love for God comes hand in hand with recognition of awe and fear that needs to accompany that love. And Rav Aaron generalized it. I think an important message, I plan on speaking about this in Mirtz Hashem in the lecture I'm giving in a few weeks at in the yeshiva, as part of this whole renaissance of Tanakh learning in Eretz Yisrael, there's been a renewal of studying Tanakh without Mefarshim. It's called in Israel Begova Hainayim. It's an Israeli phrase at eye level, that we don't necessarily have to filter Tanakh solely through what the Ravan or Rashi or the Rabbag said, but we can just read it as a standalone text and try to generate meaning and application and inspiration. And it's a larger conversation, and I plan to have that conversation or introduce it as part of my lecture in a few weeks about what are the religious implications of such a style of learning. But Rav Aaron said as follows, regardless of what one thinks about viewing biblical characters in ordinary human terms, relating to God at eye level is clearly problematic. The idea that one can relate to God on an even plane is inconceivable. Rather, we can hope and pray for God to relate to us through the thick cloud, and we need to strive to relate to him through the thick cloud. That's a great way to conclude. Again, there's nothing stunningly novel about this sicha. Very often, Rav Aaron's ideas were not stunningly revolutionary if you shrunk them down to their core idea. I think some of their mystique and majesty, which is the sweep and the sheer volume of references he quoted, and the ability to create nuanced differences between the two, and of course the balance, which was always latent in all of his conversations.